Welcome back. We're joined now by Paul Gilligan, who's Chief Executive of St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. Paul, welcome. Paul, there are distressing stories in the news all the time. Parents are usually very attuned to them. And a lot of the time, like, our instincts as parents can be to protect our children from these stories. Is that the right approach, do you think?
Well, I suppose the difficulty for parents is they don't fully understand what has happened themselves, and they're going to feel very strong emotions, anger, distress, outrage. And in the past, we might have been able to protect our children from exposure to such events, but now it's just impossible. I mean, with social media, children and young people are going to be as aware of the details of what has happened as adults. They're going to be completely immersed in it sometimes. So really, we have to have the conversation with our children. We have to really start talking to them about
what's
happening.
And it's a difficult conversation to have. Have you any advice for people on how to even start that conversation?
Well, the first and most important priority, I think, is to provide comfort and love. Now, that might sound very obvious, but we have to decide what our children's emotional needs are in response to a particular event. Children and young people, for example, won't necessarily react the same as adults. So very often they personalise an event. They think maybe I'm at risk, and they start to think about it from their own perspective. So first and foremost, we need to, I suppose, reassure them that these events occur rarely. Mm-hmm. We need to explore with them how we might keep them safe, give them security. And then I think look and see what exactly do they know and what are we prepared to tell them that's age appropriate.
And do we sit down and have this conversation with them, or do you try and let it arise organically? Or,
well, I'm not a great believer in the big sit down. I think, you know, and you talk to any parent, I mean, first of all, parents themselves will know how best to raise it with their children. But I think it's best integrated into the normal day in the car, watching the news, filling the dishwasher, and it's best to let your child direct the conversation themselves. So opening up the conversation, hearing what they want to know, hearing what they already know, and only giving them the information that they want themselves. Too much information can be as damaging as too little information.
Okay, so you're guided by the child on this. Now, look, bullying is something that's on a lot of parents' minds in general, but I suppose a bit more so at the moment. What are the signs to look out for that might tip you off if your child is being bullied?
Yeah, anything that indicates to you that your child is behaving unusually is a flag. So you can give parents a list of things, but if the child's mood changes in any way, if their behaviour changes in any way, where you feel this is not usual. Now, you know, anybody listening to us this morning with teenagers will say, well, that happens every day, every minute.
Yeah.
But I think it's where you think, actually, no, this is not normal. This is not the normal mood. This is not the normal behaviour. Where it starts to impact on the child's ability to be generally happy, you're beginning to ask questions. Bullying is tricky. There's a lot of awareness around bullying, but with social media, with smartphones, bullying now has been, when a child is being bullied, they have no protection from it. In the past, if it was happening in school, they could come home and they're safe. Now it's continuous. It reaches into every corner of a child's life.
And if it becomes clear then that the child is bullying and they admit it to you, how do you deal with that then? Because you're going to have a situation where the child is going to go, no, please don't go into the school. Or they're going to, you know, some kids are going to say, please don't confront this.
Yeah, and this is the balance. So the balance is to listen to what your child wants you to do, talk to them about how they see the resolution of this issue, but also you've got to balance that with their safety. And very often, I mean, what I say to parents is, you know, you've got to do what you've got to do when it comes to their safety. Very often children will say, please don't do anything, but when you explore that a bit more with them, they want you to take action. And you've got to ask the question, if they're telling me this and they're being brave enough to do that, they want it to end. And so I would say softly, gently, listen to what your child wants. Maybe they're able to cope with it themselves. If they're not, you need to take action.
And you need to step up and be the parent, no matter what the child is telling you, in a sense. Now, in terms of pornography and everything, I mean, when you think back to what the talk was about sex, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, what we have to teach our children at a very young age about sex has all changed, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, all of these things are key to a child's emotional development. And what we want to do is protect their wellness and give them the best chance to develop emotionally healthy lives. P- pornography is a reality. If you look at the stats, they're telling us that, for example, most 9 to 16 year olds have access to the internet at times unsupervised. Now, 82% of parents will say they're brokering that involvement, but we know coming home from school, whenever, they will have unsupervised access. The reported statistics of access to pornography are very high, over 20%. 47% of teenagers say they have had access to sexual images, and that's self-reported. So in my view, it's likely that your child will have access to pornography, will accidentally come across
or will have to take that as a given. So then how do you try and help them to deal with it or cope with it or have the right attitude to it?
Well, unfortunately for adults, the time has come where it has to be incorporated into that conversation around sex and relationships and all that stuff. And you have to present it in a way that's not dramatic, that's not creating a major issue about it, but nonetheless explaining and educating young people from as young as possible, as you think
they're probably.
Well, I think certainly 12, 13, 14, because that's when most young people have unsupervised access to the internet through their smartphones or whatever. And that conversation is around things like the fact that it's giving you an inappropriate image of sexuality. It will affect, can affect expectations, body image. It can impact on relationships later on, and it can impact on mental health. We know that continuous and ongoing access to pornography can result in depression and anxiety. So all of these things need to be talked about with children.
There are a lot of parents, though, probably cringing now as you say that at the thought of sitting down with their teenage boy or teenage girl and have that conversation.
Yeah, and that is the truth. I mean, I appreciate that. But unfortunately, we have come to a situation where, I mean, in the past, we could have parked that conversation. But now, the reality is, a child is going to come across these inappropriate images. They're going to come across sexual explicit material, either by accident or by searching for it. And we can either wait until that happens and they won't approach us, or we can proactively raise the issue in an age-appropriate way. We're not necessarily using language that we would use as adults. We use child-appropriate language. We don't scare them. We don't create a drama, but it needs to be part of that ongoing parent-child conversation.
We touched on kids having phones at 12 and that there. What advice would you give people around social media and their children?
Well, again, the statistics are telling us that, you know, almost 100% of children from 14 up have a social media profile. Significant numbers under that age have a social media profile. I take a view that says we've got to take a reasonable approach to this. I think it's important that you see the benefits of social media, you see the benefits of the internet, but you've got to lay down the ground rules, and it's all about educating and guidance. What you're trying to do is teach self-discipline. It's not about saying, well, I'll control what they're doing until they can do their own thing. It's about teaching them self-discipline. So yes, limiting the time they're on it, limiting checking what they might have access to when they're younger, talking, really important, giving them the opportunity to raise. It's interesting that 50% or over of young people who say they've accessed inappropriate material say that they're distressed by it. So they want to talk about it. They want to understand it. This is not something that they want necessarily to come across. And so we need to give them the opportunity to talk about that.
Okay, Paul, I think the key message across all of that is that we need to keep the lines of communication open there, isn't it?
And not be afraid to talk about traumatic, painful and horrendous events, because our children need us to do that.
Okay, Paul Gilligan, thank you very much, and we'll take a quick break.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.